Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. So happy to be back here, not just because it's Monday, but because it's Monday after I've been away for a while. Tim Staples and I got to go up to St. George, Utah, which is a lovely town. And I promised that I would, to the people in St. George, Utah, that I would say it's a horrible place to live and you should not go there because they're being overrun by Californians leaving California and moving to St. George, Utah. But I just want to thank everybody there. Guess what the parish is there, Darren? Yes, it's St. George's in St. George, Utah. Thanks everybody there and for the wonderful welcome that we got and the very fine hospitality. And also, I want to say a quick thank you to Chris Check and David, who they covered for me while I was away. But now we're back and ready to go. Second hour, Jimmy Akin will be here with us, and we'll do open forum with Jimmy Akin. That's a good way to start the week. But you want a great way to start the week? How about Jason Everett? We're going to talk about chastity. You probably know about Jason's work. He's the founder of the Chastity Project, the author of a whole bunch of books, and a renowned speaker on chastity who has helped many, many people, especially lots and lots of high school and college age people, to reconsider what the society teaches about chastity, or fails to teach about chastity, is probably what I should say. Among his books, Pure Love, Raising Pure Teens, How to Find Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul. Jason Everett, thank you for being with us.
It's good to be back.
By the way, 888-318-7884. Lots of people will have questions for Jason. So if you're if you want to dial now, dial 888-318-7884. Is there any relationship in your mind with the kind of, I don't know, the last century where we kind of abandoned the traditional notions of chastity and us moving out into new things, like not even being able to distinguish between the sexes anymore?
I think without a doubt. I mean, we could spend an hour on that subject alone. But I mean, you think of what Christ said in the Gospel of Matthew, blessed are the pure in heart, they're going to see God. What that means, if we are not pure in heart, we'll have a very difficult time seeing him, not only in eternity, but even in ourselves, in one another, in creation. And Vatican II said that when God is forgotten, the creature itself grows unintelligible, meaning if we lose sight of supernatural realities, it'll come to the point where we're actually blind to natural realities of what it means to even be male and female. And I think that's where we find ourselves today. And I think it goes deeper when you talk about contraception, pornography. I think those have deep roots as well when it comes to all this gender confusion.
Oh, indeed. So what do we do about it? I mean, I suppose you can work backwards. And the latest thing is this gender stuff, but it clearly just seems to be a pattern. I don't know what comes next. I don't know if we start give up, maybe polygamy is next, or I don't know. I'm just, well, like somebody with an intelligence perhaps not of this world decides what's next in this evil parade. But what do we do about it, Jason?
Yeah, it would be nice to have like an Our Lady of Guadalupe part two. You know, where we get a new Tilma, like straightens us out. It kind of feels sometimes it's kind of what we need at this
point.
G.K. Chesterton said the family is a cell of resistance to oppression. So the whole family was the means by which God wanted to bring redemption to humanity. I don't think he changes his ways, and I think he wants to continue to use the family. That's why the family is so much under attack, because it's not only the target of oppression, it's the weapon itself, you know, against this culture of lies and of death. And so I think the answer is ultimately the family. You know, I was watching a video documentary the other day on a young girl who's transitioning to a boy. It was a boy transitioning to a girl. Not that that's actually possible, but the mom was helping the child through this whole transition with the dresses and the pronouns and the puberty blockers. And the whole documentary, all I'm thinking is like, where's your dad? Like, where's your dad?
Yeah.
And I'm just watching the whole, and never once is he even mentioned. I'm like, where's the father? And so when kids wrestle with the gender dysphoria stuff, I don't think we want to like dismiss it or ignore it or interrogate the kids. We need to listen to the dysphoria of where is this coming from and take it seriously, because sometimes there's some roots that really need healing, and these lies are growing out of those unhealed wounds in the family.
We're going to talk about chastity this hour. If you have questions, 888-318-7884. Maybe you have questions about maintaining a chaste life. Maybe you have questions about teaching your children about that, or your young adults, or calling a spouse to a chaste life. 888-318-7884. Whatever your question is, it's welcome here. Jason Everett is our guest. Again, 888-318-7884. It's, you know, to hear you say that about where is the dad, there's a guy on HBO, Bill Maher, and I don't get HBO, but somebody sent me a clip of this. I don't know if you saw it, talking about transgenderism, where I thought he actually was making a great deal of sense. And his basic question was, if this transgender thing is a natural phenomenon, why is it pretty much doubling every 10 years? And now it seems to be just going through the roof. Why is that happening? That seems to be a reasonable question, and not a hateful question, by the way. I don't feel like a hater when I ask that.
Yeah, and you know, and people in favor of gender theory would say, well, it's just becoming more socially acceptable, and as a result, all of these millions of people, you know, who have experienced gender dysphoria finally are coming out into the light. And so that's the argument. But here's the question: how come the numbers are disproportionately skyrocketing for adolescent girls? We're not seeing like women in their 40s being like, hey, I can finally declare that I'm a man. We're not seeing that. We're seeing this social contagion element among these, especially 14 to 17 year old girls who are typically not in dating relationships. They're spending insane amounts of time on Tumblr, Reddit, YouTube, Instagram. A lot of times they have high functioning autism, and they're in these little social circles where one girl comes out as trans, then it's another and another. And we're seeing this globally. And, you know, America is really the only country right now that's got our kind of pedal to the metal in terms of puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. Over in the Netherlands, where they pioneered a lot of this stuff of the gender transition protocol, they're kind of scaling back. They're like, wait a minute, we should hold the horses here. Let's not just run full steam and give these kids puberty blockers at the age of 9 because it's a boy thinks it's a girl. Let's assess this. Let's give it a couple years, because more often than not, when the kids go through puberty, it resolves on its own 80 to 95% of the time. And so in a lot of these other countries, they're realizing we ran too fast because – I mean, if you make a decision at 13, imagine if you were stuck with that for the rest of your natural life. Like, I mean, I've seen people's yearbook photos of what they were thinking with their hairdos at the age of 13.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if that could change your life. I mean, and not to make light of it, but I mean, you go on GoFundMe.com. There's 41,000 girls on GoFundMe.com asking people to donate so they can have a double mastectomy because they don't identify as a woman anymore. I mean, we're carving up their bodies because they don't feel like they fit into these gender stereotypes. And it's not the answer. It's just a modern day lobotomy procedure, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I wonder if you share the feeling that I have is let's see if we can get through this hurting the fewest people that can possibly get hurt. Like, you almost want to say to parents, you know, just whatever you can do, don't let them do physical harm to themselves, or, you know, get them to 25 or something. And then they'll wake up from this.
Yeah. And they've asked the kids, like, okay, now just so you know, when we go through these surgeries or you go from puberty blockers right to cross-sex hormones, you will lose your fertility. I mean, you will never be able to have kids. Does that matter to you? Only 5% of the kids at that stage of development will say, oh, wait a minute, that does matter to me. Most of those kids, that's not even on their radar. I remember Abigail Schreier saying, that's like telling somebody the sun is going to burn out in like 500 billion years. It's like, okay, I couldn't care less. I'm not going to be around for it. And so for a lot of these kids, that type of thinking isn't even developed in their brain until they're in their mid-20s. So like you said, the best approach is the least invasive procedure. Instead of like, okay, if that's who you are, full steam ahead with this lifelong medicalization of a psychological problem with biological surgical interventions is not the answer. So let's try to walk with them patiently, you know, alongside of them with compassion and love and respect. But putting these kids on a lifetime of drugs and surgeries sure isn't the answer.
The number is 888-318-7884. I kind of got off on the transgender stuff because I knew that Jason would have very interesting things to say about that. But you can ask whatever you'd like about chastity, whether you're teaching chastity, whether you're trying to live chastely yourself, or whether you're trying to help somebody else live chastely. You're very welcome to call 888-318-7884. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back to get to those calls. There are a couple lines still open. I'm supposed to tell you this before we go to the break, however. Visit shop.catholic.com today while our customer appreciation sale is still underway. Hundreds of resources, just $2, $4, $6, and $8. Books, DVDs, digital videos, ebooks, MP3s, CDs, a huge selection to shop from, all less than $8. And it ends at midnight Hawaii time tonight. Visit shop.catholic.com.
Catholic. Answers Live.
Underwriting support provided by Homeschool Connections. Homeschool Connections hosts the Catholic Homeschool Conference. The 2022 Catholic Homeschool Conference is June 10th through 11th, and the website is CatholicHomeschoolConference.com. That's CatholicHomeschoolConference.com.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
One time somebody said to me, "Why don't you air these people?" And I said, "No, because I don't think they're Catholic." He says, "By what right do you have to say that?" I said, "I own the network."
Mother Angelica Live Classics, tomorrow night, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Television and Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Very pleased to have Jason Everett with us this afternoon. Maybe it's evening where you are. Maybe it's even morning where you are. And if you have a question about chastity, there are few people that you would be better served to go through than Jason Everett. As a matter of fact, I don't know any. So if you have that question, you're very welcome to call 888-318-7884. Calls coming in, Jason. Shall we go to the phones?
Let's hop on.
All right, let's go to George in Iowa. Listening on Iowa Catholic Radio. George, we're very glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Jason Everett.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask about celibacy, but I was hearing some very emotionally charged language, like, some very emotionally charged imagery to persuade people, like carving their bodies up, such a, and that sort of thing. You may bring up a point that statistics of growing transgender instances of people coming out as transgender may be occurring in younger age groups, but we still, I think what's important is we do live in a free country, and we need to listen to people who have these feelings and these thoughts, and it is true that for most of history, we haven't enjoyed these freedoms of identity where someone can have different beliefs and they don't get executed for them. Someone can have a different sexual orientation and they won't be executed for them. And I think the best way to do as little harm as possible is to not enact legislation, because you're doing just as much harm if someone is truly transgender. And if you don't like the concept of it, you don't know with 100% certainty that you're doing the best, most healthy thing for someone. If they truly wish to transition,
George, I'm going to get...
then say in Alabama, they outlaw your existence by saying you can't get anything until, you know, years or decades down the line until we decide when. And then, well, it's the same. You're talking about concerns about, well, down the line, you know, your body is developed more, and then that causes complications with the transition process.
Okay, George, I'm going to let Jason respond to that. Thank you, George. Hang on a quick sec. We'll get Jason's response.
No, thank you, George. There's a lot of really good points there. A couple things to consider is a lot of this, as you had mentioned, with Alabama, are being determined on a legislative level, state by state. For example, in Oregon, the age of medical consent is 15 years old. And so if a 15-year-old girl decides that she identifies as trans, she can have a radical double mastectomy without her parents' approval. Hospitals in Oakland are now performing these for girls at the ages of 12 years old. Down in Los Angeles, 13 years old, double mastectomies for these girls. And the party line is like, well, hey, this is allowing these young people to embrace the deepest truth about their identity, and who are you to stand in the way of who they truly are, because trans is their identity. Well, one thing to consider is if you go on Reddit, there are now 28,000 people on Reddit that identify as detransitioners. These are people who have gone through the procedures and then realized, what the heck did they let me do at the age of 15? This was child abuse, and they just kind of gave me the green light because it was politically correct, and they thought that they were loving me by just going along with this. They were immersing themselves in my own delusion. And the reason why I use these strong languages of delusion and carving the bodies up, whatever, I've got sitting over to my left here the DSM-5. Now, this is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Health Disorders, and you can open up right there to gender dysphoria, and it gives you, well, what is gender dysphoria? It is a mental health issue where a person experiences great distress because the gender that they identify as does not align with their biological sex, and it causes them this deep distress. And so the answer is like, well, how do we get rid of a person's distress if you don't like your body? Well, the idea here in America right now is we'll drug the kids and then give them life-altering surgeries, and then they'll finally feel at home in their own bodies. But if you look at the research of this, after they go through the puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones, and then they have the sex reassignment surgery, within 10 years, they have a suicide rate 19 times higher than the general population. To me, this is not the best standard of care that these individuals deserve. And the question, you know, that I would propose to you is, what if you had a girl, not even a girl, let's say a woman in her 30s or 40s, who said, you know, I'm fat. And you look at her, and she's like 95 pounds. She's clearly anorexic. She has an eating disorder. She has an image of her body that does not conform to reality. And she wants diet pills. And then she wants a liposuction. So will you give her what she wants because it's a free country so that you can relieve her of the dysphoria she feels when she looks in the mirror at her own body? Any good doctor would recommend, no, that is not treating a mental illness. That's collaborating with a mental illness. Or if someone were to come to you that has bodily identity integrity disorder, these are people that actually identify as amputees. They will see people missing arms and legs and envy them. And I wish I was you because I don't think that my arm should be here. If they go to any doctor and says, I'd like to have my arm removed, doctor will say, no, this is not a biological problem. This is a psychological problem. And the same thing is true of gender dysphoria. There is not a problem with the body. And so if the gender, if you think you're this gender, but your body speaks the other, which one of those things holds more weight? Is it the body or is it the feelings about their body? And so these individuals deserve respect. They deserve compassion. They deserve love. But to me, if you love somebody, you can't lie to them. And I think the data is very clear that when we go along with this gender theory, it is not benefiting these individuals in the long run. But yeah, it's a deeply sensitive issue. And I think we need to lead with love on this. But to me, it's not love to remain silent. And the people being the most outspoken about this right now are more often than not the people that have gone through it 10 years later. And now they are screaming from the rooftops, hit the brakes, people. We have run way too fast on this issue. And so if you go to our website, chastity.com/gender, you can find a bunch of their videos. You can read their testimonies. They're not only launching websites and ministries, they're launching lawsuits and they're winning. Kira Bell won over in England, went all the way up to the high court, and won that she should not have been given these things at such a young age before the mind could fully develop. And so I think as a culture, we need to be brave and courageous in speaking out of this, not of bigotry and hatred, but out of love.
George, I'm going to say thanks because there are lots of folks on the line, and it's any question having to do with chastity. If you want to talk about transgender issues, that's perfectly fine. You're welcome to do that. But I do want people to feel welcome that when we have Jason on, whatever the question is having to do with chastity, it's very, very welcome here. George, thank you again. Let's go to Ashley in Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Ashley, thank you so much for your call. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Jason Everett.
I've read the How to Find Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul. Awesome book. Thank you so very much. I guess my question stems a little bit further from that. So if you've kind of discerned and you don't feel that you're being called to religious life, and, you know, I thought I was being called to married life, but still, you know, gaining on 40 and single, can you just kind of, I guess, explain how someone would start exploring consecrated virginity and if that's still something that the church even does anymore? Or I've just kind of heard about it recently and I've never heard of it before, and so I'm just a little bit curious.
Yeah, no, a lot of people aren't aware that, you know, consecrated virginity is an option for women. You may be familiar with Dr. Janet Smith, who created that audio CD, Contraception, Why Not? She's a brilliant philosopher, theologian. She not long ago became a consecrated virgin. And so for a woman to discern this, I think the first step would be to call your diocesan vocational director. You just call the diocese, say, I'd like to talk to someone about a vocation, had a question, you know, and they'll reach back out to you. And typically, you know, you go through a process of discernment, and then the actual procedure becoming a consecrated virgin would be for a never married woman. You go through a rite, and the bishop will actually give you this certain blessing, and you make these vows, you know, this promise of consecrating your virginity to God before the presence of the bishop. You go through this rite, and then you become that, and you live as a consecrated virgin in the church. So we're seeing a lot more of this happening, which I think is a beautiful thing. This is an ancient tradition in the church. I mean, we've read about thousands of years ago that the church was doing this. And so I would say first steps, your priest would be a good person to talk to, but he might not even be familiar. Hey, you know, I've heard about it too, but frankly, I'm not sure what steps to take. But for sure, if you were to contact the diocese and say, you know, could this be my calling? Because maybe you've felt those inklings to religious life, but didn't feel like community life or, you know, becoming a nun or going to the cloister wasn't quite for you. But maybe God is calling you to serve his church more out in the world. Is a consecrated virgin, the vocations director through your diocese, I think, will be able to give you some information on this, hopefully some good websites, maybe even some discernment retreats. And so I would recommend going to him or to her, and I think they'll give you the next step on discernment regarding that step.
Okay, Ashley?
Awesome. Thank you, guys. We really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. God bless you. The number here is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. The book that Ashley mentioned, How to Find a Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul. That book's still selling. People, that's a very that continues to be a very popular book, at least for the young people I know. Lots of them have read it.
Yeah, I remember meeting a college girl. She started a book study of it in her college dorm, and it got too big. So she started a second study on the next floor of the dorm, and it got too big. Before you knew it, there were 5 book studies on every single floor of the dorm, you know, educating these college girls on how to avoid losers. And so thankfully, it's still out there helping young ladies to navigate through the single years.
That's beautiful. Because I mean, I guess I think even among many young women, there's even a confusion about what you're supposed to want. Are you even supposed to want this? I always feel so bad for them when I, like, maybe, you know, like, reflect on what you personally actually do want, not worry about what you're supposed to want. But do you hear that from young people? Like, am I supposed to even want a husband or a man? Am I supposed to even want children?
Yeah, I mean, women doubt themselves way too much. And they start, maybe I'm too picky, maybe I'm too naive. I mean, this guy wants me to send him some pictures after our second date, and I'm kind of feeling leery about it. He's making me to feel like I'm some uptight prude if I'm not willing to do X, Y, and Z with him. And that's why it's so important for girls to feed themselves with solid information so you realize that you and your standards are not the problem. So important for you to surround yourself with sisters and brothers in Christ and your family so you realize that you should be setting your standards high as heaven. Because look, if it's not about quantity of guys. I know it gets lonely when it can't find a decent one, but like, I mean, I could find you a date like literally within 15 minutes. Let's get on the phone. Let's download some app. And like, well, I can get a guy at your doorstep in 15 minutes. I mean, yeah, quantity is there, but quality, obviously, it takes a little bit more time. And it can be frustrating, but just make sure you're not getting all alone. That's when you start doubting yourself. And then you start making decisions based out of loneliness and fear of loneliness. And that's when the big mistakes happen.
The number again, 888-318-7884. We're talking chastity with Jason Everett this hour. Up next is Mary in Grand Isle, Nebraska, listening on 91.5 FM. Mary, go ahead with your question for Jason.
Hello. We were talking about gender and the difference in gender ideology. And Dr. Alan Grant had this in her book. She said, if a mother is given oestrogen in early pregnancy, her XY genetically male baby can be born with female-type genitalia. The male is feminized. If the mother is given testosterone or a progestogen, her XX genetically female baby can be masculinized, displaying obvious genitalia and small penis at birth.
So did you want Jason to comment on that, Mary? Because what we're talking about, there are babies who are born with indeterminate sexual organs or a variety of sexual organs, some of which might fit with the genetics of the baby, some might not. And these are well-known medical conditions, but did you want Jason to comment on that?
Well, that's fine.
Okay, Jason?
Okay. Yeah, no. During the early stages of embryonic development, the gonads will release these hormones that signal the body to produce, you know, whether, you know, the male production of the male gonads will be testes, and then for the female, it'll be the ovaries, and then that'll lead to the masculinization or feminization of the embryo. If a unborn female embryo is exposed to higher levels of progesterone in utero, higher levels of testosterone, it will, to some degree, depending on how much is the baby's exposed to, lead to masculinizing effects. But I hear the trailer music going, so stay tuned, and we're going to answer the rest of your question as soon as we come back from the break.
Mary, do hang on. We'll be right back. Catholic Answers Live. We're talking chastity with Jason Everett. The number, 888-318-7884.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com. Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Hi, this is Janet Williams. Please join us for Women of Grace tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern here on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Always a great pleasure to have Jason Everett here with us doing wonderful work all around the world with high school age, young adults, and with all the rest of us to remind us of the value of the virtue of chastity and of the many helps that we have in living chaste lives. Chastity.com, right? People can go to chastity.com,
yeah,
Jason?
Chastity.com. Mm-hmm.
And you can find out all about what Jason and his wife do and all the other folks who work with them do. We were talking with Mary in Grand Isle, who was talking about kind of what we might call intersex conditions, children who are born with indeterminate sex or with the organs of either sex combined. What did you want to say to Mary about that?
Yeah. As you were mentioning, these are often called disorder. There are intersex conditions, also known as disorders of sexual development. Some people will throw around numbers like this happens one out of every 100 or 200 births. So there's more intersex people than there are redheads in the world. These numbers are inaccurate. Typically, the external genitalia is a clear indication of the person's gonad type 99.98% of the time. Now, for those 0.02% of the time, sometimes you end up with an ambiguous genitalia, and so other testing is needing to be done at the time of birth. It can obviously be very traumatizing for the husband and wife. The baby's born. It's like, is it a boy or girl? And the doctors might need to say, well, we're not sure. And so they would have to do other chromosomal testing. Now, some people say, well, what's the big deal? You're either XX or XY. It isn't even that simple. In fact, there are women who have XY chromosomes. There are men who are XX. Some people are XXXY. Some are XO. And so the medicine that we had 50 years ago led a lot of people to think, oh, it's this or it's that. Now, some people will jump on this and say, well, you see right there, gender is a spectrum and these people are transgender. It's like, no, hold on. If you speak with individuals who have, intersex conditions, they will be very clear to point out, no, I am not transgender because I have a disorder of sexual development. It doesn't mean that I'm less of a man because of this part of my body doesn't quite conform to the way most men's bodies are. And so if you were to want to read up more about this, I would recommend Ryan Anderson has a book called When Harry Became Sally. Now, fortunately, you can't find that on Amazon because they deplatformed him there, but you can find it elsewhere online. And he does have a chapter that dives in depth in these different disorders of sexual development, Klinefelter's, Turner syndrome, things like these. But this is not proof that transgenderism is true or that sex itself is a spectrum, because there's only two gonad types. There is no third gonad. And so what we see with disorders of sexual development is a disorder of a fully developed reproductive system. And since we're gendered according to our bodies are organized for generation, the giving of human life, when there's a disorder there, just like if a person has 9 fingers instead of 10, it doesn't mean that they're a new category of human being. It means that something didn't quite develop well. Sometimes that happens with the heart, the mind, the lungs, and sometimes it happens with the reproductive system. But this does not constitute a third gender or the proof of transgenderism.
Mary, I don't think you made that implication, but I take by the question that you wanted to know how that fit with this whole idea of transgenderism. So thank you, Mary.
And one other note, Sai, if I can throw in there, they have done studies that when women are exposed to extra levels of testosterone in utero, oftentimes they have a predisposition towards more stereotypically masculine activity and interests, where when the girl gets exposed to more testosterone, she'll actually be more into rough and tumble play, more into shooting guns and things like that, as a result of the additional testosterone or progesterone that she'd received in utero. But having more of a tomboyish attitude does not make a girl into a boy. And this is just a super important point, that just because you don't fit this narrow stereotypical box of how a girl should be or a boy should be, it doesn't mean, therefore, that you're not a boy or girl.
Again, the number 888-318-7884, but I'll tell you what, I don't even know why I'm giving it out right now. Every single line is full. So back to the phones we go. Again, thank you, Mary, for that question and for your patience. While we had to do a break, we're going to go to John all the way over in Puerto Rico watching on YouTube. John, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Jason. Did I hit the wrong number? John in Puerto Rico? I do not hear him right now. Okay.
Yeah, my mistake. I was muted.
Oh, you were muted. Oh, okay, John. Yeah, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call, Mr. Everett. So my question would be, as somebody, if you see that somebody is, struggling to break an addiction that they've had over several years, and the internal, not necessarily the external, but the internal temptations, they get stronger as the days go on where they haven't engaged because they're trying to break it. What would you recommend to somebody who is struggling with that in particular as it pertains to something sexual like pornography?
Yeah. Father Jacques Philippe, one of the pieces of advice that he gave regarding this is, most importantly, don't lose your peace. Because a lot of times we get so worked up and anxious because we get frustrated. And part of that is pride of just like, man, I thought I'd be over this by now. And this thing continues to be a battle. And we give in, or maybe we make a mistake and we fall. And then we get overly depressed about the fact that we fell. And then we're getting upset about the fact that we're upset that we fell. And what Father Jacques-Philippe is trying to point, like, keep your peace. Yeah, you fell. You want to have true contrition in your heart. But don't get so anxious and upset and worried and despairing about this thing. It's going to be a battle. I mean, with the Christian life, the person who doesn't give up wins. That's how you determine who wins in the Christian battles, the guy who does not give up. It's like that old Dwayne Wade basketball commercial, like fall down 7 times, get up 8. And so I would say to persevere and be at peace. You'll go through seasons like this. What I found, sometimes it's like pulling two magnets apart. At first, it's like, oh my gosh, this is so difficult. The further you get from each other, it's like, okay, this is a little bit easier. Now, sometimes there's a hiccup in there. It's like, okay, I feel like I'm getting some freedom, and then something happens and we fall back in. Oh man, it's hard again. I would encourage you to look, when did the slip up happen? And think of the acronym BLAST, B-L-A-S-T. Was I bored, lonely, angry, stressed out, or tired? Spend some time thinking about that. Yeah, I was kind of stressed out, and I was bored, and I was feeling really lonely. Okay, those are three legitimate issues that might need resolution. Okay, loneliness. Have you isolated yourself from friends and family? Are you having your time with God? Do you have a young adult community that you're surrounding yourself with? Solve that on a deeper level than pornography ever could. Boredom, hey, go work out, go for a jog, get busy, get involved in works of mercy or service. We've got to meet the deeper needs underneath these things. And if you're looking for a kind of a long-term game plan on how to win it, Matt Frad and I came out with a book called Forged, 33 Days to Freedom, because so many guys kept coming to us like, dude, I know it's wrong, but I keep messing up. What do I do? And so we wanted to make sure to tackle it not just from a spiritual or theological perspective, but also physiological, emotional, neurological, psychological. And so we have 33 days in that book. You just walk with us for 33 days. We'll send you a free video every day giving you different strategies. But don't give up. Not only can you win this, you have to win this. I mean, defeat, surrender to me is not even an option. Because, I mean, who really wants to be 10 years from now still hooked on this stuff, 20 years from now? To me, it's not an option. And God would not call you to this victory unless victory was possible. And so keep your peace, keep your trust in Him, not in yourself and your own strength. But when you fall, go back to the sacrament of reconciliation. Look at those times when you fall, what was going on there, meet those deeper needs, and then just know that God will complete the good work that He has started in you.
Okay, John?
Yes, thank you very much. Very helpful.
All right, thank you very much. Thank you for that question. We're talking chastity with Jason Everett, 888-318-7884. As I said, every line is full, so I'm going to keep going and heading over to, right back here to California. I'm going to go to Amy, watching on YouTube here in California. Amy, go ahead with your question for Jason.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if you could give me some solid Catholic resources on what chastity looks like in a marriage, because I know we still need to be careful and we don't want to cross the line even if you're married.
Yeah. I mean, two thoughts. One is years ago, Christopher West wrote a book called Good News About Sex and Marriage. And so you could get that book, perhaps read it as a couple together. And the key element really of John Paul's theology of the body when it comes to chastity and sexual intimacy is reverence of piety, of reverence for that gift of sexuality within marriage and what that looks like and how does that play out? And like, is this out of bounds? Is that okay? Christopher West gives some good pointers on that. And then I know, Cy, was it Father Hugh Barber was on Catholic Answers Live? And I think he did some shows specifically on this, didn't he?
Oh, he did. I'll tell you what, while you're talking with Amy, I'll find them. We have some focus episodes with Father specifically on what is, in this case, it wasn't just on maintaining chastity, but what's permissible between spouses in what can you and what can't you do as far as Catholic teaching. I'm going to find a link for that while you're with Amy.
Okay, yeah, and so one, the basic moral principle to try to keep in mind is that the purpose of sex is for babies and bonding, and the meaning of it is it's the renewal of your wedding vows in and through the body. And so you made these promises and vows that our love is free, it's total, it's faithful, it's ordered towards procreation. And so when you become one flesh, you just want to make sure that you are renewing those in the body. Is this truly a free act, you know, or is it being driven by lust? Is it total? Is it, am I totally giving myself to this person, or is contraception involved? You know, questions like that. Am I really living this out in a way that is free, total, faithful, and fruitful? Kind of apply that to different sexual acts or questions. and it'll bring oftentimes a lot of clarity. So obviously things like contraception, abortion, pornography, for a lot of Catholics, like, okay, I get it. You know, it's a no-brainer. I know that doesn't belong in the bedroom. We shouldn't be doing this stuff. But, you know, what about this thing? What about that? I'm not quite sure. If you have questions, check out the link that Cy is going to put on there, and I'll bet you that Father Hugh dives into that in the show that he did.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, people were a little shocked by that show, Jason, because it got very graphic. But people's questions are graphic. Like, quite, you know, people want to know quite specific things, and Father was quite specific in his answer. So I'll put it in the show notes, the address to this Catholic Answers Focus episode that we did with Father. And the way people can get the show notes, just go to Catholic.com, find this episode on the calendar, and then when you click on the episode, show notes come up with it. And so by this afternoon, after we're done with this program, those notes will be here. Thank you very much, Amy. I got to take a quick break. I'll be right back with more Jason Evert, Catholic Answers Live, your questions on chastity.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Underwriting by Great Catholic Music.
Great Catholic Music, your one-of-a-kind streaming platform for traditional Catholic hymns and contemporary favorites 24 hours a day. Music that soothes the soul, that's safe for the whole family to listen to. What a relief. Great Catholic Music. Download the free mobile app or listen on any Alexa-enabled device or write from your PC or tablet at greatcatholicmusic.com. Great Catholic Music, melodies for the soul.
I was listening to the EWTN, and you were on with one of your little snippets, and you said some words that brought me back to the church. I've been away for a long time. You don't know how much I appreciate those words, and I don't know why those particular words that day got to me.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. Jason Evert, our guest, 888-318-7884 is our number, and lots of folks remain on the line. Jason Evert, well-known in the Catholic world and in circles well beyond the Catholic world for helping people to live chastely, also to understand why it matters to live chastely. It's not immediately obvious in our day and age why it's important to do that, because I think all the propaganda goes the other direction. Not a lot of, pro-chastity Netflix shows that I've noticed. I may have missed that section of Netflix, but I haven't seen those. So your questions are welcome on chastity, whether you're Catholic or not. You can call and ask. Let's go to Angel now in Ohio, listening on Annunciation Radio. Angel, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Jason Evert.
Hi, Jason. I'm just wondering, why do they call it transgender when, to me, it appears to be actually transneuter? That's my issue. I mean, if you're taking somebody's gonads off, they're not going to be able to have children, whether they're a man or a woman. They're actually neutering these people.
Yeah, I mean, that is obviously one of the... Go on ahead, sorry.
Isn't that what it actually is neuterization? Don't they actually neuter
these people? Yeah, if a child goes directly from puberty blockers to cross-sex hormones, it does cause lifelong sterility in the person. If a person chooses to have what's called a gender affirmation surgery or a sex reassignment surgery, obviously sometimes those can cause sterility depending upon what operation is being sought. Now, the majority of people who do experience transgender inclinations more often than not do not go through with some of these full-blown surgeries. Some of them because they don't want the surgery, sometimes because they can't afford it. Some of these things cost upwards of $50,000 for some of these procedures. And so financially, sometimes it's not always possible. But the reason they call this transgender is because, you know, it was initially called transsexual. But, you know, it's obviously can't change your sex because every single cell in the human body that has a nucleus has a cell. And so every cell of the human body is sexed. And so to change your sex, you'd have to swap out every cell of your body. Not possible. And so the word gender started being used as, well, this is the this deeply felt sense of identity that I have as it regards to male, female, both, other, or some combination somewhere in between. And now, the word gender used to be used just for language, you know, in Latin languages, whether it's Spanish or whatever, that noun is feminine, that noun is neuter or whatever. And then it kind of moved from there, and then it became synonymous with sex. And then it kind of moved even further from the feminism of the 1960s and 70s to kind of gender as a social construct. It's more of a socially expressed behavior according to one sex. And then it kind of divorced even further from Dr. John Money. And he's the guy who basically proposed the idea that these things are not only distinct, they can be divorced. And so your gender is the identity that you, you know, that resonates with you. Trans means kind of on the other side of. And so the idea of transgender is I identify on the other side of the biological sex that I was quote unquote assigned at birth. But like you said, unfortunately, should a person choose the medicalization procedures, many of those unfortunately will sterilize a person. But even if you are sterile, you're still male or female, right? I mean, there's many people that are, you know, struggle with infertility or full-on sterility, impotency, that does not mean that they're male or female.
Angel, I'm going to leave it there because the lines continue full. Jason Everett is our guest, going to Jonathan in Springfield, Illinois, listening on 92.7 FM. Jonathan, go ahead with your question for Jason.
Hello,
Jonathan.
Yes, my question.
Jonathan, we're going to need you to speak into the phone. I'm not exactly sure what's happening, but
hello?
It's very, very muffled. Can you speak directly into the phone, Jonathan?
Hello.
Yeah, there you go. Go ahead and ask Jason your question.
Yes. So my question was, with how important chastity is for a spiritually enriching life, how does a young man remain chaste in today's society? You know, you get on the dating apps, and it feels like everybody just wants to, you know, have a one-night stand or a hookup. And I find myself questioning whether or not I should make a compromise because I feel like it's hard to find somebody who also values chastity.
Okay. No, very good question. I think one thing to keep in mind is, okay, let's say you compromise now. How long is the compromise going to last? Right? I mean, let's say, okay, I'm going to lower my standards so I can find a woman because I'd really like to start a family or whatever. But is that really the kind of woman that you want raising your kids? Is this the type of the best friend that you want to be around with for the rest of your natural life? More oftentimes, these dating apps are like menus where you're just like, what am I in the mood for? Pizza? Do I want this? Do I want that? You kind of order it, you get what you want. It commodifies, in a sense, the human person based largely upon their physical attractiveness. And you can be anyone you want on these dating apps. You can show whatever best photos you have. But to me, let's take a step back. Are these modern dating apps the best way to go? I would say no. There's Catholic versions. I mean, you can see Ave Maria Singles, CatholicChemistry.com, Catholic Singles, Catholic Match, Ave Maria Singles. There's a lot of good Catholic online dating websites that I'd recommend you check out where, yeah, it might not be a billion people on the website, but the quality of folks that you're going to find there is a lot better than someone that might be on one of these other sites and be like, yeah, I'm Catholic. When was the last time you went to church? Well, I was baptized, I think, when I was 2 weeks old. Does that count? Like, okay, we got to find people that have more than physical attractiveness, but spiritual attractiveness to them as well. So if you want to find some of those links that I mentioned, you could listen to this episode again or at our website, chastity.com. Just click on the dating question and answer section there. Scroll down to the bottom. You'll see these different links. But I'd recommend give those a try because chastity is hard enough when you both agree with the importance of that virtue. Chastity becomes almost impossible when you commit to someone who doesn't believe it.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. I appreciate that. Let's go. We got an anonymous caller in Texas listening on 9:10 a.m. Anonymous, the phone line is yours. Go ahead with your question for Jason Everett.
Thanks. Here's my question. You know, I know this is a family radio, so I want to keep this kind of PG rated. But here's my question.
Or go for G.
It seems
even.
Like most. Okay, yeah. Well, my question is, you know, most girls, it seems to me, do very much like to, quote unquote, fool around before marriage. See, my problems with the girls is most of them, if I be really nice to them, then they think I'm gay. If I try to hit on them, then, you know, that makes them mad too. So I'm kind of in a bind. You see what I mean? Can you comment on that? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, a lot of times girls will tend to be physically aggressive and modest or whatever in terms of sexuality, because a lot of times they think, well, that's what the guy wants. And if I don't offer him that, then he's not going to want me. And so if I get real flirty and sensual with these guys, then I might be able to have a boyfriend, and maybe one of them will actually care for me for more than just my body. And sometimes girls have been hurt by this and really burned. And a lot of times they, in a sense, hide behind their nakedness. And what I mean by that is they're offering the guys what the guys are least likely to reject, namely the physical, out of fear that if I didn't give him that, he wouldn't want me at all if he knew who I really was. And so behind this behavior is more often a fear. It's not that you've got a whole culture of women that really want a whole string of meaningless sexual encounters with guys who aren't even going to text them 3 weeks later. I really don't think that that's the deepest desire of a woman's heart, but a lot of girls reach the point where it's like, well, this is all the guys want anyway, so I might as well meet him where he's at, and then maybe it's going to last. But to me, this is just lowering our morals and settling for so much less than we deserve. And so, yeah, some girls do live like that, but I would say keep your standards high and focus on developing a friendship with these ladies so they can realize, no, just because you treat them like a lady and you're a gentleman doesn't mean that you're attracted to other guys. It just means you're man enough to treat a woman as she deserves to be treated. But that type of understanding takes time. It's not something she's going to pick up on a first, one-liner that you tried to give her the first time you meet her. It's like, no, try to befriend these girls, and they're going to get to see, wow, this guy's different. This guy has some quality to him. This is what I really want. And so I would say, don't become somebody different than you are. Keep your standards high. Treat the ladies as they deserve. And if they reject you because of your standards, well, hey, their loss.
Anonymous, thanks very much. Appreciate the question. Jason Everett is our guest. We're talking chastity. We also kind of started with some questions on transgenderism. James is next, listening on John Paul the Great Catholic Radio here in San Diego. And I'm so glad you're on the line, James, because the founder of that radio station, of that group of radio stations, is sitting in the studio with us right now. Raul is here, and I hope everybody is supporting that station in our area. We sure like being on the air locally. But James, with all of my advertisement out of the way, let's go ahead with your question. Go ahead with your question for Jason Everett.
Thank you. And yeah, JP2 Radio is excellent. It's really good. Jason, Johns Hopkins pioneered gender reassignment surgery in the United States in 1960, and they did it for a dozen or so years. But then they abandoned the program because there was a high rate of depression and suicide. In other words, they didn't feel like they were really helping the mental health of these people. So my question is, why are we doing this once again? Why is it a fad now? I mean, is it hubris? Is it, do we think we know differently now, or what? What are your thoughts on that?
Jason?
Yeah, you know, as you had mentioned, back in the 60s and 70s, you had Dr. John Money out there who, you know, performed an experiment essentially on these boys who were born twins, one of them who had a botched circumcision. And so the parents reached out to him of like, hey, I saw you on TV and you said that we could raise this boy as a girl and then he'll never know that he lost his genitals. And Dr. Money said, oh, this is a perfect study. Then this is his chance to show that gender is a social construct and we can mold kids these way. And so he took this family under his umbrella. He sexually abused the boy. I mean, it was horrific. And the boy ended up committing suicide. His brother died of a drug overdose. It was a complete failure. And Dr. John Money hailed it as this tremendous success. And as a result, it led to so many more institutions starting this and doing these surgeries. And then along came Dr. Paul McHugh. And in 1979, as he said, he shut down the Johns Hopkins transgender clinic there because he said, look, we've done the research. The data is clear. These individuals are not better off after these surgeries because they still have these comorbidities that existed before the issue. Because more often than not, people who experience gender dysphoria are wrestling with a whole host of things, whether it be trauma, family attachment issues, as I had mentioned before, high-functioning autism, depression, anxiety. Go through a surgery, guess what? All that stuff is still going to be there. And they realize that, shut the whole thing down, and it stayed shut down for a while. And then due to, you know, activism and transactivism saying, hey, well, you know, we demand these things. We have a right to this. You know, they kind of caved in and have started it back up again. And now there's, I mean, last I heard, more than 100 gender clinics around the United States alone. But I think what we need to do as a culture is look at the people who have been doing this longer than we have. Over in the Netherlands, they're scaling things back. And for a good reason, it isn't helping these people long term.
James, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. But you probably hear the music. That means we've got to wrap up this hour. Sorry to those we didn't get to, but man, lots of calls for Jason Everett this hour. Find out all about what Jason does over at chastity.com. He's a speaker, an author, and a very, very helpful person when it comes to chastity. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks for having me on.
Hey, earlier, Jason mentioned that show we did with Father Hugh Barber. I misspoke. I said it was a Catholic Answers Focus episode. It was Catholic Answers Live. It was called Sex After Marriage, and it's available at our website. You can just find it in the show notes. Coming up, we'll do an hour of open forum. You can ask whatever you like. Jimmy Akin will be here. Open forum, Catholic Answers Live, right after this.